From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump has said that he does not believe the report released by his own government laying out the impacts of global warming. The National Climate Assessment is a product of over a dozen federal government agencies and is mandated by Congress every 4 years. The White House released this latest report on the Friday after Thanksgiving, likely an effort to bury its conclusions. The report paints a dire picture of the scenarios we face in continuing to burn fossil fuels. But on Monday, Trump said he just didn't believe his own government's findings. Under Trump, the U.S. has backed out of the Paris Climate Accord, which was agreed to under President Obama at the United Nations Climate Conference in 2015. This year's UN meeting, COP24, is taking place in Katowice, Poland. Reports emerged earlier this month that the Trump administration was planning a side event at that meeting promoting fossil fuels, in particular coal, which is among the dirtiest of fuels. Well, we go now to Poland to speak with Daniel Jubilier, who is the co-leader of the Sustainas Youth Delegation to COP24. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Hey, great to be here.
So let's first talk about the assessment, the climate assessment, before we get to what's expected to take place in Poland. How important was this report? It's released every 4 years. I looked through it and it seemed incredibly comprehensive, geographically covering industries, covering the various scenarios and trying to also project toward the future. This seems like a really important report.
It absolutely was a really important report and a really challenging report to read as a young person. You know, I'm 25 years old and it's talking about climate impacts around the country that I'm going to live through and see in my own life. And my children or my friends' children will see even worse if we keep on the path we're on. So I think the report was very important and was also really sad and strange how it was released on Black Friday. You know, this is a major national report about an issue that affects all of us, and it should have been released, you know, with a full releasing alongside, you know, amazing policy proposals and community action and all of these things to address this crisis. But instead, we have a presidency and an administration that is in the pocket of the oil and gas industry and is doing everything they can to slash, you know, environmental and climate protections and policies. It's a really challenging time in our country, and that's part of why we do the work that we do to push back on what the administration is doing.
So in the horrific weeks that the California fires were destroying whole communities, killing Americans, there were some remarks from the right about, you know, people choosing to live in forested areas that are prone to fires. But one of the things that this report does is it breaks the U.S. up into, I believe, 10 regions. So the Northwest, the Midwest, the Northern Great Plains, Alaska, Hawaii, etc. And it shows that there's no place safe from the impacts of climate change in the U.S. So, you know, we have in the Gulf Coast region, we've got the hurricanes and the flooding, including in the southern Great Plains and Southwest. We've got the drought and the heat waves and the fires. No matter where you look, in the Northeast, we've got record-breaking cold spells and hurricanes, all of which are linked to climate change. So this report basically makes it clear that there is nowhere in the U.S. that's safe, right?
Absolutely. You know, climate change, one of the reasons that it's can feel like such an overwhelming issue is because it's so massive and so global and has so many impacts. I live in Oakland myself, and it was really challenging being under that blanket of smoke in the Bay Area for 2 weeks. It was the longest stretch of unhealthy air quality in Bay Area history. You know, I had work canceled. I couldn't leave my house without wearing a smoke mask. And it was really heartbreaking to, you know, to see kids and young people who I work with not being able to go outside and, you know, have fun in the outdoors. And, you know, even more so, I was more sad and scared for our homeless neighbors, for families with young children and the elderly, you know, climate change doesn't impact all of us equally. It too often, the climate impacts exacerbate existing inequalities in society. And that's part of why, as a young person, it's fighting for climate justice and coming to this global UN climate summit. It's so important that we push back against the denial of the Trump administration. We push forward real solutions to this climate crisis, and we get to the root of the problem and address the toxic and dangerous influence of the fossil fuel industry in our politics, which is a part of the reason why we see this denial over and over again from our administration.
The Trump administration and its allies and its fellow climate change deniers often attempt to undermine climate change assessments produced by scientists outside of the U.S. government. So independent scientific research, international scientific consensus, the IPCC report. But this report was created by federal government workers working within federal government agencies, right? We should be looking at this as the assessment of the U.S. federal government, right?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And it's pretty strange, honestly, that the findings of the report and Trump's policies are so at odds.
The report also points out the incredible cost of having to deal with the impacts of climate change. I mean, even setting aside the human cost, which is, you know, something it's hard to even put a price on. If you just break it down to dollars and cents, we talk about hundreds of billions of dollars so far in dealing with the impacts of climate change. And what I found was really interesting about this report was that it pointed out if we actually do stuff, do take on the solutions to mitigate the worst impacts of climate change, it shows how much money the U.S. government could be saving. Shouldn't that be a wonderful, fact welcomed by those who complain about government waste?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's spot on. There are so many benefits to transitioning our economy and our society off of fossil fuels and towards renewable sources of energy and towards more sustainable methods of producing food and transport. And I really believe that a lot of those solutions are already there. And what's lacking is the political will to have them come to scale in the way that we need and at the speed that we need. But, you know, I mean, just think about the benefits of transitioning off of coal and having a funded, you know, just transition for coal workers to renewable sources of energy on people's health. I mean, it's amazing, you know, cleaner air, cleaner water, a more stable climate, better paying jobs for young people and a path out of, wealth inequality. These are all things that I see would be possible if we had, you know, effective and well thought out climate policy. Unfortunately, when you think about leaving fossil fuels in the ground, that's very expensive for oil companies. And so they're very resistant to change. But I think you're right that, certainly just from a financial standpoint, it's much more cost effective to address climate change now versus having to pay for the increased damages later.
It seems to me that this report can be a very powerful tool in the hands of people seeking to sue the U.S. government. I'm thinking, for example, of Our Children's Trust, this youth-led lawsuit that is claiming that the U.S. government is violating the constitutional rights of young Americans by deliberately jeopardizing their future in not tackling climate change. This and other lawsuits could easily point to the government's assessment and say, the government says we are in deep trouble, the government is refusing to take action or making things worse. This could be a very useful legal tool, couldn't it?
I agree. one of the youth on that lawsuit suing the government is on our delegation coming to the UN climate summit this year. And that's a really bold and exciting legal strategy that I think has a lot of hope and potential. And I imagine that for the attorneys working on that lawsuit, this climate report will be just further evidence for them showing that our government has known about the dangers of climate change really all the way back to the 1960s and has consistently promoted fossil fuel use, has consistently promoted, building more freeways and extracting more fossil fuels, subsidizing oil companies, permitting pipelines, even when it threatens people's water supply. So I imagine that this report wouldn't shock an attorney. I don't think there is anything necessarily new in it in terms of the risks of climate change, but it's spelled out in much more clear detail the cost to Americans and to the United States, and the fact that our government isn't taking, or the fact that the Trump administration isn't taking that report seriously is a big problem, but it's also nothing new. You know, we've seen administrations over the decades deny climate change and promote fossil fuels at the expense of people's health and at the expense of my generation.
Right. The government could be accused of not taking its own advice in this case, its own report, and yet it's not actually acting on it. One of the reactions that Trump had when speaking with reporters on Monday, first he said he didn't believe the report. You know, he said he's read parts of it. Then he said, you know, it's always hard to sort of figure out what's actually going on in this man's head. But among the things he said was that the U.S. is, quote, the cleanest we've ever been. I think he's referring to the use of clean energy. And then he said, but if we're clean, but every other place on Earth is dirty, that's not so good. So I want clean air. I want clean water. Very important. It sounded like he was implying the U.S. was a leader in the use of clean energy, but none of the other countries of the world were doing their part. I mean, that's all I can sort of infer from this. You're at the COP24, ahead of the COP24 meeting in Katowice, Poland. How does the U.S. compare to other countries in at least committing to clean energy?
Well, the United States is the largest historic emitter of fossil fuels of any nation in the world. You know, we've built a lot of our wealth off of powered by fossil fuels. And so, you know, I'm coming to COP this year with a delegation of American youth from the United States who are saying that our government needs to do our fair share to rapidly reduce emissions. We're calling for developed nations like the United States to phase out fossil fuels by 2030. And to offer more climate finance to developing nations who've done the least to cause this crisis, to for them to have the resources to support their transition and also efforts to adapt to climate change when they have to. So I you know, Trump's statements aren't accurate. He's often plays a game with you know, saying a lot of different things that aren't factual. And really, at this time, we need real leaders. We need people who are standing up and who are fighting for communities and who are fighting for real change. We don't have much hope that under the Trump administration that the United States will advance good climate policies at the COP. We don't expect our country to suddenly take leadership on climate change in Poland, but we are, however, going to be demonstrating our resilience as young people as we're fighting every day at home to challenge the fossil fuel industry and build a more just world. And that's part of the message that we're bringing. And the message that our government doesn't speak to us. You know, as youth, we wholeheartedly reject the politics of fear and denial and dishonesty of this administration. And we have a very different vision for how politics could be. And that's part of the message that we're bringing to this global summit as well.
Now, the media reported a couple of weeks ago that the Trump administration was planning on attending the climate talks in Poland, and Reuters reported that they were planning a sideshow promoting coal. It is just quite remarkable that at a climate meeting to address the impacts of fossil fuel use, the Trump administration was planning on promoting the dirtiest of fossil fuels. How do you think this is going to be received in COP24 by other nations, by other delegates?
I think by and large, it's going to be perceived as ridiculous and as a distraction and a waste of time. And I really do believe that that's a big part of the administration's strategy with this side event promoting coal at the UN climate talks next week, is to distract and to, you know, to cause controversy in a way that kind of muddies the waters for progress at this really important global summit. You know, it's kind of funny that the day that side event is planned on December 10th, the second week of COP, is also meant to be what's called the pre-2020 stock take. So it's going to be a really important day of countries actually talking about their actions to reduce fossil fuel emissions, which is where we need to be focusing. So, plans are still in the works on our end. I'm not going to share much now, but we're aware of the event and plan to respond and intervene in some way because it's not, it's utterly absurd for them to be hosting that event at a climate summit.
What is expected to take place, as far as you know, within the halls of the talks? In recent years, the COP meetings have sort of made it harder for civil society to be present inside the meetings, precisely because civil society has been urging delegates to act much more strongly after the Paris Accord and this modest agreement was arrived at. What's the next step at these subsequent COP meetings in various countries? Are they basically going to be looking at the ways in which the Paris Accord is actually having its targets met?
That is one important piece of what's happening here. At this climate summit at COP24 next week here in Poland, this is all about writing the Paris rulebook, which is a set of policies to implement the Paris Agreement. The Paris Agreement is a framework for action, and it sets some really big goals, like limiting climate change to only 1.5 degrees C. That's the target we believe is necessary, and it also mentions, at all costs, limiting fossil fuel emission or limiting climate change to 2 degrees Celsius. However, we're on track for far more than that with the current pledges that each country makes under this global agreement. And so, really, whether or not the Paris Agreement works is all about how it's implemented. How do countries count their emissions? How do they share them in a transparent way? How does climate finance work? All of these technical details are being negotiated over the next 2 weeks in Poland. And the Paris Agreement was sort of heralded as the global accord to bring an end to the fossil fuel era and usher in a new era of renewable energy, of green jobs, and of an adequate response to the climate crisis. We don't know yet if that's what's really going to happen with the Paris Climate Accord, if fossil fuel industry lobbyists and countries like the United States have their way, the Paris Agreement won't have any teeth and won't really have the power that it needs to guarantee that we avoid the worst of climate change. We can talk about this abstractly in the news, but at COP in civil society, we meet people from around the world who are really on the front lines of this crisis. I was in Paris in 2015 when the agreement was signed and met incredible young people from the Marshall Islands. And hearing some of their stories of literally watching their cultural sites and their homeland swept away under rising seas is really heartbreaking. And anytime we're talking about climate change, there's very real people who are being affected today. And that's why we don't have time for distractions. We don't have time for a weak agreement that doesn't have any rules of enforcement. It's kind of like I work with middle schoolers, and it's kind of like me saying, we all need to clean up our space at the end of the day, but then having no real mechanism to make that happen. It's not effective to just have the goal. We also need to have really clear policies in place that hold countries accountable to reaching this goal. So that's what's happening at COP. As young people, our priority this year is number one around really pushing for climate finance. We feel that finance in the form of money from wealthy countries in the developed nations that have emitted the most fossil fuels owe a debt to developing nations. They owe a climate debt because we've caused this crisis and they haven't, if you just look at emitting fossil fuels. And so we're really pushing for the Green Climate Fund to be replenished to $100 billion by the year 2020 so that it has the funding it needs to help developing countries.
And then finally, Daniel, tell me about the people's demands for climate justice. This is a set of demands that can be found online at peoplesdemands.org that many, many organizations have signed on to and individuals have signed on to. And they're basically, I understand, sort of pretty obvious solutions that people are calling for. Tell us about this.
Yeah, the people's demands are a really exciting set of demands that civil society is issuing this year. These demands are created primarily by incredible activists and community organizers and folks in the global south who are facing climate impacts already, and this is what people really need to have a good shot at survival. Our organization signed on, and we're working closely with our partners at the COP to ensure that these demands are implemented. One of them is to keep fossil fuels in the ground. You know, plain and simple, anything that results in more fossil fuel infrastructure, more coal mines, more pipelines, more fracking, and more offshore oil drilling, all of these dangerous and dirty energy sources aren't climate solutions. And so these people's demands call for rejecting, you know, false solutions like certain market-based mechanisms that allow for continued fossil fuel extraction. Like, that's just not going to work if you look at the science. The people's demands also includes a demand around climate finance, around ending the corrupting influence of big corporations in the UN climate talks, and really pushing for solutions that are people-led, community-centered, and socially just. So solutions to the climate change that address other issues like wealth inequality, like colonization and the rights of indigenous peoples on their lands. These all need to be at the forefront of the conversation when we talk about climate change. And so the people's demands are very exciting. I urge people to check them out online at peoplesdemands.org and to sign on and to do their part in their own communities to help ensure that these demands come into reality.
Well, Daniel, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Give out a website for Sustain Us, which is the youth delegation that you're leading. I understand that you have a crowdfunding campaign to help fund the cost of your trip to Poland.
This is true. Yeah, folks can check out our work at sustainus.org. That's sustainus.org. We're also going to be sharing a lot of social media on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages, and our handle is @sustainus. So, folks are welcome to follow our work there, and we really appreciate the support.
Thank you so much. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
My guest has been Daniel Jubilier. He is the co-leader of the Sustain Us Youth Delegation to COP24, joining us from Katowice, Poland. We've been discussing the National Climate Assessment Report as well as what's expected at the COP24 meeting. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.